Today marks the 75th anniversary of a German submarine attack off the coast of Cape May, New Jersey. Let's look back and then ahead with Bob Heinle, historian with the Mid-Atlantic Center for the Arts and Humanities. Dr. Bob, welcome to NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be participating in the show.
And so, placing this date, it's less than 3 months after the U.S. was drawn into the war following Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Take us back to that intervening period. To what extent had the U.S. and specifically New Jersey and the shoreline ramped up for what was to come?
Well, it was a very hurried thing. We were in the middle of frantic preparations in 1941. Our coastal defenses were inadequate. We hadn't even learned about blackouts as yet. We fully underestimated both the danger and the type of danger that we were going to be under. Down here in Cape May, the Army built a coastal fortification both here on Cape May and across the bay at Cape Henlopen called Fort Miles, with the coastal artillery designed to fight off German surface ships and a possible amphibious invasion, both of which never occurred, and we greatly underestimated the peril from submarines. Most of the submarine fighting here was done out of what was then a Navy base. We know it today as the Coast Guard base.
How far offshore did this attack take place on the USS Jacob Jones?
About 20 miles offshore. Her crewmen called her the Jakey. And the Jakey had just been chasing a German U-boat, which had sunk a tanker further north in New Jersey. As dawn broke, was about to give up the chase when the submarine got it, and it was hit by at least two torpedoes, perhaps three, and sunk very quickly. Almost all the crewmen were killed, with the exception of about 25 or 30. But then that number was further decimated when the stern, where all the depth charges were located, sunk, and that set off the depth charges, and that killed all but 13 of the remaining crew who were then brought into Cape May. 12 made it. One died on the way in. This attack in the Jacob Jones was the first American warship sunk by enemy action after Pearl Harbor.
What was the strategic importance of this strip of coastline to both the U.S. and to Germany?
This area was at the mouth of the extremely strategic Delaware Bay and River. What with the Navy Yard up there, all the refineries, many other war industries, the Germans had made it a first priority on the East Coast to, if you will, somehow put a cork in the mouth of the Delaware Bay and stop things from going in and out. For example, I mentioned the oil refineries. It wasn't just any oil. It was high-octane aviation gas that came out of Philadelphia, and about half of all the aviation gas that the United States used in the Mediterranean, Italy, North African, and eventually European theater came out of this bay. So you can see why it was so important to strangle that flow of just that one vital supply.
Even though I presume the U.S. was subsequently sensitive to the potential for German submarines, Germany was able to sink apparently 10 ships within a mile of the New Jersey coast.
Yes, yes. This was a very dangerous spot, especially, you know, when we're talking about 41, 42, early 43, until our tactics and technology caught up with and indeed surpassed the German submarine warfare technology, things like sonar and radar and convoys and extended range for aerial surveillance by both airplanes and blimps.
To what extent was Cape May a Victorian vacation site prior to the war, and then was it utterly transformed into what would be considered a near military base during the war?
Yes, Cape May was the resort of choice for seaside vacations for the middle class during the Victorian era in the 1800s and early 1900s. The upper class went to Newport, Rhode Island, but the middle class came here. But actually, by the time of World War I, Cape May's star was starting to fade in place of, and being replaced by, Atlantic City. You see, the preferred mode of transportation in the Victorian era was by boat. So being out here on the end of a peninsula was an ideal location when people traveled by boat. But even today, when people prefer to travel by overland in their autos, back in the early 1900s, it was railroads replacing ship travel. It was a little longer and harder to get down here, and Atlantic City was much more conveniently located. So Cape May's tourist economy was sagging by the time World War I broke out, and then between the wars it was relatively mild, certainly not what it had been a century ago. World War II, we hoped that it would pick up a little bit, and it offered a temporary jolt to our economy. But really, it wasn't until our Victorian Renaissance in the 1970s that Cape May regained the luster that it had in the 1800s.
Though the area once used for sonar surveillance is apparently a parking lot, what remnants remain for visitors or tourists interested in learning more about this period of our history?
Well, right in that same spot, was the bunker, which we call it locally the bunker. It's actually Battery 223 of Fort Miles, which contained coastal artillery. We have still standing today two of the four lookout towers, technically called fire control towers, that would control the fire and help aim those guns by spotting targets and getting the coordinates to the gun battery. They're still here today. In fact, one of the towers is the only freestanding one left and is open to the public as a tourist attraction by the organization that I'm with, the Mid-Atlantic Center for the Arts and Humanities.
Fortunately, it's scarcely conceivable that the U.S. could be under attack by ships or subs off of our coastline, though in your capacity as a former analyst for naval intelligence and to the extent that you know about how warfare is currently waged, could it ever be again vulnerable, this specific strip of land?
Certainly it can. You alluded to the sonar surveillance base, which are part of Fort Miles, which, you know, you referred to the parking lot. That's where Fort Miles was located on this side of the bay. The battery was turned into a sonar surveillance base during the Cold War. And there were Russian, we used to call them boomers. They were nuclear submarines with multiple missile silos, and each missile had multiple warheads armed with nuclear weapons. Any one of those subs was fully capable of wiping out many of the cities on the East Coast, and they were right offshore. Now, the way the game was played, we would pick them up on the sonar, which they didn't know about, and then an airplane would come and use its sonar and detect them, and then according to the rules of engagement, they would sail away. But all of this was top secret at the time. In fact, if this were, 30, 40 years ago, we wouldn't be able to talk about this.
And what you're describing as a game, I'm sure, left little margin for error.
Exactly. All it would take was one not even crazy or overly enthusiastic subcommander, but one misunderstanding. So, if you have a situation today where a Soviet, spy ship is sailing right off the coast of the United States, as is happening right now, I would say that we would know, we are better equipped to know that they were there. But if they really set their mind to it, that danger is still there. Both the danger of the atomic submarines and the danger of an irrational act.
Dr. Bob, thanks so much for shedding light on this date 75 years ago and also discussing potential implications for the present.
It's been my pleasure.
Bob Hindley, historian with the Mid-Atlantic Center for the Arts and Humanities.